Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psochem Daf Lamed Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief four-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin today's shiur 8 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Dalet. At the beginning of the line, we read Abaye bar Ovin v'Rav Chananya bar Ovin Tonu Trumos Be Rabo. So you have these two sons of Rabbi Ovin, Abaye and Rabbi Chananya, had been learning the topic of Trumos, the topic that concerns the tithe one separates from his produce and gives to the Kohanim, and they were learning about Trumos Bei Rabo in the yeshiva of Rabo. Rabo was recognized as a very great man in his time. Poga Behu Rova Bar Matona. Rova Bar Matona met these two students of Rabo, Omar Lahu, and Rova asks them, "My amrisu betrumos debe mar." Rashi says, "My amrisu chidush v'taimo betrumos sheatem shoinim beveis odom godol karabo." What novel ideas and explanations do you have in the topic of trumos that you are learning by a man as great as Rabo? So we have here a very interesting interchange, whereby Rava Bar Matona is asking for some type of chidush or call novel idea, and they respond as follows: Omru le umay kashiloch, what's bothering you? It would seem that they weren't so interested necessarily in just saying some type of novel idea without being presented with some type of challenge or question. And Omar Lahu, so he says, that means Rava Bar Matona answers Tanan. We have the following Tanaic source. It says, Shtile Trumos Shinitmu. Shtile are sometimes, in the case of trees, would be translated as saplings. However, here we're dealing with young plants, young vegetables that are put into the ground to grow and expand and multiply. But at this point, they are young, the shtile trumos, and we're dealing with young vegetables that had been designated, had been tithed as truma. And they became tomei. Now, truma tomeo is something that one that we've learned about quite a bit in the last few dapim. It is something that is forbidden to eat. It's forbidden even for a Kohen to eat it. It can be used as fuel. So we have these shtile trumos, these young truma plants that became tomei v'shoslon, and they were replanted. Tiharu milatamei, they are, as a result of being put in the ground, planted, buried, planted in the ground, they lose their capacity of conveying tuma to other items. V'asurin milechol, but they are prohibited in eating. And at this point, it appears, or one would think that it means that it's prohibited for a kohen to eat it because of their tuma status. But now this would be contradictory. V'chi me'achar detahor milatame, once you tell me that they are no longer capable of being metama other things, so it would imply that they've lost their tuma status. Amaya sur milechol, so then why is there an eating restriction? So we have this Mishnah from Maseches Trumos regarding these young plants with what seems to be an inherent contradiction. This is Rava Bar Matona's question. Omru le, so Abaye and Rav Chananya, who were the Bnei Ovin, answered, Hochi Omar Rabo. And of course, we were waiting to hear something in Rabo's name, of course, so here it is. Thusly says Rabo. Now, notice before we go into explanations, just the structure of this sukkah. On the side, we have under our nosei, mivne heading, a house marking. And these are hezberim. These houses, and we've numbered them as well, these houses represent explanations. And you'll note that they continue down Omid Beis as well, where Rav Yirmiyah receives a house marking, and he's called number three. These are hezberim, lemokor dekatoni truma tamei sheshoslos abadomen eteres. The source that we just read, indicating the young truma plants that are replanted, they become tor, even though they had originally been tame, they become tor. B'chol zois asura b'achila. And the question is, im niteres, if they have become undefiled, lama asura b'achila, then why are they prohibited in being eaten? So now, we continue in the Gemara. Thusly says Rabo, my asurin, asurin lezorim. It's forbidden for non-Kohanim to eat them. In other words, by the fact that they were put in the ground, we are saying they don't lose their truma status. As far as their tuma is concerned, they become undefiled. But as far as their truma status, that remains. Hence, these shtile truma, remain forbidden for non-Kohanim. The Gemara now starts a question that lasts a number of lines. And as a result of these questions, we're going to eventually get to Rav Sheshes, who presents a second explanation for the source. So the Gemara asks, Umay komashmolan, so what is this source telling us? Gidule truma truma, that something that grows forth from truma. In other words, if you plant a truma item and it grows, then the additional growth also has a truma status. Is that the point? Well, Tanina, I have another source to convey that idea, and we, of course, always attempt to avoid redundancy. What's the other source? It says, Gidule truma truma. That which grows forth from truma is also considered truma. The chitema, and you might try to answer, Gidule gidulin, that what this source is telling us is that that which grows from the growth, in other words, quality, a second generation additional growth, and maybe that's what we are being told. Umay komashmolon, and what would the chidush, what would be the novel point? B'dover shein zaroi kola, that when you have a type of plant whose original seed remains intact, that the growth from the growth also has truma status, well, ha nami tanina, that too is covered by another source, in which it says as follows, hatevel, tevel is untithed produce, which is forbidden, of course, to eat, hatevel gidulav mutarin, that which grows forth from the tevel, if you planted, let's say, untithed seeds, grains or seeds, something that's edible, and you planted them before you tithed them. So, gidulav mutarin, that which grows forth is allowed. The davar shezaro kola, if the original seed in its growth decomposes and is no longer there. Aval bedavar she'ein zaro kola, if you're dealing with a seed that remains, or a seed or a bulb or something that remains intact. Afilu gidule gidulin asurin b'achilo, even the growth that grows forth from the growth remains usur, remains forbidden to eat. So in this source, true, it's featuring tevel, but just like tevel is something that's forbidden for everyone to eat, so too truma is forbidden for non-Kohanim to eat. So you see the rules of gidulin and gidule gidulin and Davar Shezaro Kola, Davar She'ein Zaro Kola, they're all of these points are already taught. So why do I, or what is the explanation then of the source that we opened up with Shtile Trumos, and Rabbo's seeming explanation doesn't work, doesn't help? Ishtiku. So that means that the students of Rabbah, that's Abaye Barovin and Rav Chananya Barovin, who attempted the answer by presenting Rabbah, this question seems to reject their answer, ishtiku, and they remained silent. Omar lahu midi shmiya omrule midi shmiya loch baha. So they said to Rav Bar Matana, who had presented the question, well, did you hear anything about this? In other words, you were asking us. The answer we gave you to explain the source doesn't seem to work. So did you hear anything? Amar lahu. So Rav Bar Matana answers, yep, I have something. Hochi Omar Rav Sheshes. Thusly says Rav Sheshes, my asurin. Notice we have a little arrow in the space to meet the left-hand side of the Gemara. This is to help you to connect to the word asurin in the source. What does asurin mean? Asurin lekehanim. Hoyel v'ifsilu lehu behesech hadas. The truma, once it's planted, so technically speaking, it loses its tuma status. It becomes undefiled by virtue of the fact that it's buried in the ground. However, they cannot eat it, and that's a function of hesech hadas. Rashi says, behesech hadas kishnitmu mitchila, when the truma plants became tome initially, hesich daito mehem shuv milishonron, they stopped paying attention to them in terms of guarding them from tuma. As you know, truma is something that one must prevent, protect from becoming tome. But once it became tome, they stopped concentrating on that. V'nifsolin v'esachadas, and that imposes a new type or an additional type of deficiency, of psul, of ruination, called hesachadas, the lack of concentration, literally the removal of your mind. The Pasuk says by Truma, Mishmeres Trumosai, and from this we learn this Pasuk in the context of Truma, Ovid Law Shimur, Velo Tasiach Daitcha, guard it, don't stop thinking about it. So Rav Sheshes explains the reason there's an Isur Achila on the Shtile Truma, even though they were planted and lose their defilement, nevertheless they become unfit for the Kohanim to eat because of this new concept called Psul Hesech Hadas. The Gemara says, well, Honicho Lemandam Hesiach Das Psul Haguf Have Shapir. This explanation will hold up if you explain or categorize the Psul of Hesech Hadas as being an inherent separate psul, separate type of deficiency, a separate category of ruination, something unique, termed, as we said, hesech hadas. It's a category unto itself. So then I understand that which we learned above, that even though they were planted and lost their tuma status, there nevertheless remains a separate, new, unique psul called hesech hadas. Elolamandom or hesech hadas equals psul tuma. If you say, however, that hesech hadas is really a subcategory of tuma, that as we saw before in the Rashi, that is a result of someone being mesiach das, so he's not watching it from becoming tuma. Well, my ikol lemeimar, what problem is there over here? Did he not replant them, and did that not cause them to become tahor? So why should there be a psul of hesech hadas if hesech hadas is a subcategory of tuma? The replanting would have seemed to alleviate that problem. Notice we have a bracketed section, and this is a very long bracketed section. And if we take full advantage of this, we will find ourselves skipping to the fourth wide line on Omid Beis, and we immediately read, Ein Zriya L'Truma. The concept of planting something and thereby removing its Tuma status does not apply to Truma. So we can tell you that Hesech Hadas is in fact a subcategory of Tuma. And the question had been, well, didn't the replanting of it remove that? So to that we will eventually answer that Ein Zriya LeTruma, that it, that does not work. Zriya does not remove Tuma from something that had been Truma. That was quite a dramatic move that we made in terms of Gemara markings. Major skip, but enabling us to immediately get to the point. What an incredibly useful move on our part. Take advantage also of the note that we have introducing this bracketed section. The starred note says, Achreya Sugrayim, Agmara Meshiva. After the brackets, the Gemara will answer this problem of that, the problem being that there is an opinion that says Hesech Hadas is a psul tuma. Well, then why is there an Isser Achila? And the answer is, as we saw, that the Zriya does not help in the case of Truma that became Tomei. And we also noted in the parentheses here that the Basisa Sogram Elu, the basis of the use of these brackets, Nimtza Barashi Bamidbeis, Dibra Maschu, Omra Kamei. If you look at Rashi on Omid Beis, the third to last narrow line of the Rashi, Rashi there says, Omra Kamei de Rav Yirmiyah, Ha de Rav Sheshis Li'el, Da Surin Milecho, Mishum Hesech Hadas, who the Gemara will be connecting back at that point to what we are dealing with right over here. So the skip that we did enables you to see that very easily. However, we continue with our note, the starred note, Besocha Sograyim, Muvo HaReka, Mishnei HaManda Omrim Binyan Psul Hesech Hadas. We mentioned that there were two opinions as to how to categorize this problem known as Hesech Hadas, this removal of concentration. Is it a separate, unique deficiency, or is it a subcategory of Tuma? So that will be expanded upon in the bracketed section. We can now that we've seen the overview of the Gemara, we can turn our attention to the bracketed section. Before actually reading the Gemara, we want to look at our Nosauer topic heading on the outside margin, where we've written Hesech Hadas Poseles Machlokis Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish Mao Mahut Hapsul. We'll see a machlokis, a controversy between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish. What is the nature of this deficiency? The Rabbi Yochanan Avi Psul Tuma. According to Rabbi Yochanan, Hesech Hadas is a subcategory of Tuma. The Reish Lakish Avi Psul Haguf Psul Bifnei Atzma. It's a unique, separate type of deficiency that's not connected or not dependent on the issue of Tuma. So now the Gemara, the Itmar, in the brackets, the Itmar Hesech Hadas, Rabbi Yochanan Omar Psul Tuma Have, Rabbi Shimon Ben Lakish Omar Psul Haguf Have. Of course, you noticed we have the bracket length indicator, that's the dash dotted line, that's to the side of the Gemara. We see Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish arguing about how do we categorize the problem of Hesech Hadas. Now the Gemara elaborates. Rabbi Yochanan Rapsul Tumohave, Hesech Hadas is a problem of the possibility of the item having become Tomei. In other words, if you're expected to concentrate on the item, to guard it, to keep it from Tumah, and then you turn away, there's an attention lapse, so that creates a psul, a tuma of psul tuma, tuma ruination. Shim yovo elio v'yitareno shomin lo. The point here is, the practical point is that Hesech Hadas being, according to Rabbi Yochanan, psul tuma, that maybe it became tomei. Well, if the prophet Elio, whom we refer to as Elio Anovi, would come and inform us that it did not become tomei during your concentration lapse, we will listen to him because of the fact that Hesech Hadas itself is only a problem of tuma. Reb Shimon ben Lakish Omer Psula Guf Havei. Hesech Hadas is a separate a separate problem. Shim yovo Eliyahu v'itarenu ein shomen lo. If Eliyahu would come and say, you know, the item that you had this concentration lapse on, that item did not become tomei, that will not change the psul that Hesech Hadas represents, because it's a separate problem. As we go on, we see a crown marking, and on the side of the Gemara, the Arvivne, we introduce this or represent this as Kushyos al Reish Lakish. We continue now in the Gemara. The first Esfe, the first question, comes from a source, but you'll also notice that the question is a long question. It carries us to the second line from the top of Omid Beis. Esfe, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan asks, Rabbi Yishmael benoi shel Rabbi Yochanan broika oimer. Lul katan hoya bein kevesh lamizbeach b'marovo shel kevesh. There was a lul katan, a small opening that was present between the ramp leading up to the top of the mizbeach and the mizbeach structure itself. And this small opening was on the floor of the Azora at that point, namely between this hole or space or gap existed between the ramp, the edge of the ramp as it touches the Mizbeach on the western side of the ramp. Shesham hoyu zorkin psulei chatas ha'oif. We would, the practice, what they used that hole for was if there was a bird sin offering that became psul, and the psul referred to here is a psul of hesech hadas, the bird offering would be thrown over there, utuubar tsurasan, it would be left there till nightfall. Tubar Tzos is an expression which literally would mean that their form is ruined, but it's a reference to leaving it there till nightfall. The Yoisin Lebeis HaSreifa, and then it would be taken out to be burnt. If we look in the Rashi, Shesham Zorkim Suli Chatasov, Lefishi Nasis Beker Marovas Dromis Lamato. The way, the place that a chatas ha'of was slaughtered was there at that point at the on the floor of the Azora at the south western corner of the mizbeach. Ukshi ira psul ba, and if there arose a problem, a ruination, a ruining factor. She'ein psul haguf mamish, a psul that's not an inherent psul. The ein yochol esor from yadin, because it's not an inherent psul in the chatas of, it cannot be burnt immediately. And that is because mishum bizoyon kochim, because that would be shameful to kochim to take something that doesn't have an inherent deficiency and to burn it immediately. Noisin oisosham, therefore they were placed over there in that wool cotton. V'tu'ubar tsurasa, Rashi continues, hainu psul lino. The psul that would set in would be what's called a psul lino. Ibor tsuras maris boser belinas laila echad, who? By having the chatasov stay there overnight, over that one night, and the next morning it's considered psul. The kevon shalona belaila, since it stayed there overnight, hare, he nosar, it becomes categorized as nosar, viton srefa, and nosar, that which is left over beyond its time, needs to be burnt, v'nisraf, and it's therefore burnt the next morning. V'al korchoch midbo'inon havora sura, for the fact that we require this ibor sura, this leaving overnight of this particular chatasof that we said became puzzle, it's lav kishepigil ba. It's not a case where there was a wrongful mindset. Oh, in its slaughtering, oh nitmes, oh yotzisa, or a psul of it becoming tome, or it having left the azora, oh malka shalokim mitzvasa, or there was a problem in the malika. The malika is the way birds are slaughtered in the sacrificial context, tomairi. It's not talking about any of those. Top sumal yehu, those would be real, inherent, fundamental ruinations. The lomalon ladura psulino. Why would we have to set it aside to become pusul through lino, through being left overnight? The ein lono deboy lino ilav psul hesachadas. Rashi proves that when the source says that hatasof was became pusul, we're talking about a psul of hesachadas. The e amris psul chashash tumahu ikolameimar. The high psul besachadas komar. If you say that it's a psul of fear that it became tome, so that is something that is the outgrowth of having lacked concentration. The kevan de lo chazino le di itmi elo chashosh biamahu, and since we didn't see it actually become tome, but it's a mere suspicion on our part, boi ibur tsura. It needs to be left overnight. We can't burn it outright as soon as you had this concentration lapse on it. So maybe Elio will come and proclaim it to have been Torah. And the result then would be that we burnt undefiled, sanctified items. And that's totally wrong to do. Elo im shame psul hu le'atzmo filo nitmo lomali ibur tzura. If, however, you say that hesech hadas is an inherent, unique psul, not related to tuma, so why was it necessary to leave it overnight? What else were you avoiding, so to speak, that you had to develop the psul nosar on it? If it's an inherent deficiency, so it's ruined right then and there. That at the point you have this concentration lapse. So the Gemara continues. This is Rabbi Yochanan's question on Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan, having held that Hesachadas a psul tuma, he's asking on Reish Lakish that says it's a psul aguf. E amres bishlo psul tuma have. Rabbi Yochanan continues to argue and says, if you say that the Hesachadas is a psul of tuma, that maybe it became tame, therefore we need to ensure it becoming unfit by being left overnight, because otherwise maybe Elio will come and declare it to have not become tome. Therefore don't burn it immediately, leave it overnight so that it becomes posel as nosar. If, however, you say that it's an inherent deficiency, why bother leaving it overnight to achieve ibur tzura? The hotnan, do we not have the following teaching, zeha klal? The following is the rule, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis. Kol shepsulo begufo yisarif miad. If you're dealing with a deficiency in the sacrifice that's inherent, that's literally in the body itself, that can be burnt immediately. Now we've dashed underline that because that's what's relevant to our discussion. If, however, the deficiency is bedam ubebailim, it's a deficiency in terms of the blood of the sacrifice which should be sprinkled on the altar, but let's say the blood spilled out, ubebailim would be a case where the owner of the korban became tomei, and the Korban Pesach is around. Let's say he would have been expected to eat his Pesach sacrifice, and now that he became Tomei, there's no one else to eat it. So in cases like that, where there's a psul in the dam, or in the owner, which is not inherent in the sacrifice itself, to ubar tsurasan v'yotzel beis sreifa, they're left till the night passes, when they would thereby become posel as nosar, and then be taken out to be burnt. Now, what's the main point for us if we try to summarize things? Rabbi Yochanan is showing us from a source concerning the psul chatasof, which we understand to mean a psul of hesech hadas. You treat it with ibur tzura, indicating that it's a tumah-related problem and not a separate, inherent, unique psul, because otherwise it wouldn't have required ibur tzura. Omar Lay, so Reish Lakish answers, Hi, Tano, Tano debei rabo baravua hu. The Tano concerning the Chatzas Ha'Of that became posel through Hesech Hadas needs Ibur Tzura. This is a unique Tanaic opinion. The Omar Afilu Pigul Tone Ibur Tzura. He holds that even deficiencies that we would categorize as a psu haguf, something like pigul, that's a situation where you slaughtered the creature, the sacrifice, with an improper mindset. Even something like that, where the psul is inherent in the animal itself, that requires ibur tzura. So Reish Lakish maintains his position that this is not a kasha on my shita, and namely that hesech hadas is a psul haguf. Ordinarily, something like that could have been burnt immediately. However, this opinion of Rabbi Bar Avua's, the source that he teaches, holds that even inherent deficiencies require Ibur Tzura. But just, I know we're sounding a little repetitious, but according to Reish Lakish, the psul of Hesech Hadas is truly an inherent psul, and other than this particular unique opinion, things like that, the sacrifice became psul b'Hesech Hadas could have been burnt immediately. Esve, again, another challenge. Nitmo o nifsal habosar o shiotzu chutz l'kloyim. If the sacrificial meat became tome, or it became posel, and we dashed underline the word nifsal, or oshiyotzu chutz l'kloyim, or the meat left the azara, and we're talking here about korbonos, sacrifices that are restricted in leaving the azara. Rabbi Lezer Omer Yizrok. Rabbi Lezer says, even though the meat is no longer of relevance because it became ruined, you will still do Zrikas Hadam. Rabbi Yeshua Omer Lo Yizrok. Rabbi Yeshua, being consistent with his opinion, who holds that you don't do Zrikas Hadam unless you have the blood and the meat together. Rabbi Elezer says you don't have to have the blood and meat. You don't need both of them. Namely, even if the meat is gone, you can still do Zrikas Hadam. Umoyde Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Yeshua concedes she'im zora kurtza, that if the sprinkling was done, so it's acceptable as a sacrifice. My nifsal. In this source, we see the term nifsal. The korban became posel. Lav behesech hadas, is it not a reference to the psul of hesech hadas, where even though you were supposed to concentrate and mind the korban from becoming ruined, he had a concentration lapse and it became posel, and that's to the psul of hesech hadas. Iyamrus bishnu psulei tumahave, if you say that the psul of Hesech Hadas is a subcategory or a form of psul tuma, hainu de mishkachas lo de mar tzitzitz. The tzitz is the golden headband worn by the Kohen Gadol. And we know from numerous Gemaras that the tzitz had the ability to atone for a psul tuma that set upon a sacrifice. Eloi Amris Psul Haguf Have, if however you say that Hesech Hadas is a separate type of deficiency, a separate form of ruination, not connected to Tum'ah, Amai Hurtza. So why does it say in the source that if the blood was sprinkled, Hurtza, that the sacrifice is considered accepted? There's no mechanism to enable it to be accepted. If you'll say that tzitz, well, the tzitz operates only within the context of a tumah problem. The Gemara answers, and as Reish Lakish will answer, my nifsal, the psul referred to in this source is not a psul of Hesech Hadas. It's nifsal betvul yom. It became possible because someone who had originally been Tomei, he reached the end of his Tumah period, immersed himself in a mikveh, but the sun has not set yet. A person in that state is called a Tvul Yom. And a person like that has we'll call it a low level of Tumah upon him, but he can ruin a sacrifice. If he touches the sacrificial meat, so he'll ruin it. The Gemara asks, Ihachi Hainu Tomei. By explaining that it became Nifsal B'Tvul Yom, so that would, in and of itself, will explain the Hurtza insofar as, since Tvul Yom is a Tumah-related matter, the Tzitz can atone for that, enabling the korban to be considered acceptable post facto if you happen to have sprinkled the blood. However, by explaining Nifsal as the psul of Tvul Yom, well, is it not so that Tvul Yom is a form of Tumah? Is it not so that in the source itself, the first word of the source was Nitma? Well, Ihachi Hainu Tomei, then there's redundancy. It said already Tomei. The Gemara answers that is not such a problem. Trei Gavni Tomei. The source is featuring two different types of Tumah, whether it's Tumah that reached the korban through some standard form of defilement, or Tumah through a Tvul Yom. So the source then continues presenting Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua as we saw above. But as far as we are concerned, in the brackets which just closed, we saw a machlokis Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan holding that Hesech Hadas is a Psul Tumah, Reish Lakish holding that it's an inherent, separate Psul Haguf. And we saw a few questions posed or aimed against Reish Lakish, and in each case he answered the questions. In the meantime, we have we've been discussing the issue of the shtile truma that became tomei and that had been planted, and we saw that the planting removed their defilement, and we saw that they were also b'achila. We had asked why are they also b'achila if they had been replanted. We saw Rav Sheshes being the second of the explanations. He said that they are also to Kehanim because of a psul of Hesech Hadas. So we explained that would make a lot of sense according to what turns out to be Reish Lakish, that Hesech Hadas is an inherent psul, an inherent ruination factor. However, if you say that Hesech Hadas is a psul tumah, well, why is it usur for Kehanim to eat? Did the replanting not solve that problem? So that's what we're left with right now. Kisolik Ravin Omro Shmaitse Kamedur of Yirmiyah. When Ravin came to Eretz Yisrael, he said over Rav Sheshes' teaching concerning the shtile truma that had become tomei and were replanted, and he explained that the psul was a psul of Hesech Hadas. And this, so he taught this over, he said this over to Rav Yirmiyah, the Omar, and Rav Yirmiyah answered. Bear in mind, we were left with a problem. The problem being that if you explain like Rav Sheshes said that the psul, the osur lachilo is based on the psul of Hesech Hadas, and you say that Hesech Hadas is tumah related, then why did the replanting not remove that restriction? So, at this point in the Gemara, this was all told over in front of Rav Yirmiyah, and Rav Yirmiyah said, notice the skip, do we have brackets? We skip. Ein Zriya Lutruma. That's the answer. That Zriya, the replanting, doesn't help when it comes to Truma. Now, we have the bracketed section that we skipped. Let's take a look at the starred note on the side. Matras HaSograyim, the purpose of these brackets, hino, kidei, lirois tshuvas Rav Yirmiyah b'ofen miyadi, so that we can jump and see Rav Yirmiyah's response immediately. B'soch HaSograyim nimtza kol hareka l'tshuvaso. Within the brackets, we'll see the background for his point. Rav Yirmiyah's point, though, we already got a gist of it, is that Zriya, the replanting of Tomei produce, might be a means of removing Tuma. However, it is limited. It doesn't help for everything. So that will be now the topic that we find within the brackets. We also have on the other side of the Gemara, the other margin, the Nosei, the topic heading, in which we've noted what will appear as the Gemara unfolds, Tshuvas Rav Yirmiyah, Rav Yirmiyah's response, Ein Zriya L'Truma, Kamo She'ein Zriya L'Hekdesh. He will eventually, in the brackets, we will see the concept of Zriya doesn't help with regard to things that were sanctified. Likewise, it won't help with regard to Truma that had become Tomei. A second point that we will see as the Gemara unfolds is the din of Rav Hoshaya, Mei HaChag, HaMiyud L'Nisuch HaMayim. These are waters that are drawn from outside the Beis HaMikdash that are then brought into the Azorah on Sukkot time and are poured onto the Mizbeach. We call that Nisuch HaMayim. So these Mei HaChag Shenitme'u that became Tomei, Hayim HaShoka B'Mikvim Moyo L'Taron. Does submerging the water in a vessel, in a mikveh, whereby the surface of the water in the vessel, the meniscus, if you will, comes into contact with the surface water of the mikveh. That is called zriya as well. It's a borrowed expression, but it's as if you planted the water in the mikveh. That method of removing tumah from water is effective in other areas of halacha. What about applying this to the mei hachag, to the waters that were designated for nisuch hamayim? Hayim hashoka b'mikvah moyu l'taron. Does this process of hashoka literally means is kissing, but it's whereby you have water in a vessel that's filled to the brim, and there is a that forms a meniscus, a little type of dome above the rim of the vessel. The upper water pressure keeps the water in at that point, and you have it touch the mikveh. In other words, you submerge the vessel with the water in it to the point that the surface of the vessel comes into contact with the surface of the mikveh. That, in general, is a means of being metaher water. It's a very unusual area of halacha. Generally speaking, food that becomes tameh cannot become tahor. However, with regard to water, we say that hashoka is a method of being metaher water. But what about special water? What about the mei hachag? Now, under Rav Hoshaya, there are two points. Heshikon ve'achakach hekdishon. There is a situation where you did hashoka and then sanctified the water, and then there's hikdishon v'achakach hashikon. First you sanctified it and then did the hashoka. As the Gemara continues, point number three, biur Abaye b'dino Rav Hoshaya, the ein zriya l'hekdesh. We will see Abaye analyzing Rav Hoshaya's conclusion that Ein Zriya L'Hekdesh. Zriya is literally the replanting. It includes this concept of Hashoka by the mikveh, and Rav Hoshaya concludes that Ein Zriya L'Hekdesh, and Abai will analyze that. Ha'im Mugbal L'Kedushas Kli Oigam B'Kedushas Peh. When we say that something that is sanctified that Zriya does not help, what kind of sanctification are we talking about? Are we talking about something that became sanctified by virtue of the fact that it was placed in a service vessel, in a kli shores, that's called Kedushas Kli? Or does it include even something that was sanctified orally, Baal Peh, something where there was an oral declaration or sanctification without the use of a kli shores? So at this point, it might very well appear a bit abstract. The introduction we gave is simply to create an initial familiarity with the topics we're going to see right now. So let's just recap a little bit. We had a source involving the Shtile Truma Shinitlu. We saw that they were replanted, and even though Zriya, generally speaking, is designed to remove Tuma, or helps to remove Tuma, the source on Omid Aleph indicated that these plants were still Osir Bachila. Rav Sheshes told us that they were Osir Bachila, means Likohanim, because of a Psul Hesech Hadas. If you say the Psul Hesech Hadas is an inherent Psul, I understand that prohibition of eating. If, however, you say that it's a psul of tuma, chashash tuma, why did the Zriya not help? So this issue was presented to Rav Yirmiya, and Rav Yirmiya reacts. And we're continuing where you see the house number 3, and the Gemara says, V'omar, and Rav Yirmiya said, Bavloi tipshoi. And this is an expression you find in a few places in Shas, where Rav Yirmiya reacts to Chidushei Torah, that teachings that he heard from Bovel. Rabbi Yirmiya was in Eretz Yisrael. In fact, Rabbi Yirmiya arose. He, what we say in modern terms, he made Aliyah. He came up to Eretz Yisrael, and when he hears the Torah from people in Bovel, he at times reacts as follows: Bavloi tipshoi, foolish Babylonians, mishum diyasvi ba'ara dechashucha, because they sit in a dark land. And it's explained that Bovel sat in a valley, so maybe the sunlight, the hours of sunlight were more limited there, but because they sit in a dark land, amrisun shmeitzo demechashchu, you say over teachings that are dark. In other words, Rav Yirmiya is clearly dissatisfied with what he heard. Lo Shmia Lechu Hadar Rav Shimon Lakish Mishmei Rav Oshaya. Did you not hear that which was taught over in the name of Rav Oshaya? Mei Hachag Shinitmu. Mei Hachag, as we spoke about in our introduction, water designed for the Mizbeach, for the holiday of Sukkis, that became Tomei. Heshikon V'achak HaKdishon Tohorin. If before sanctifying the waters you did Hashoka, you immersed them in the mikveh, as we explained earlier, and then sanctified them, Torah. So the Hashoka works in removing the Tumah. Hekdishon v'achadishon, heshikon. If first you sanctified the water and then did Hashoka, Tameim, the Hashoka is ineffective. Michti. Well, we'll look into this. Zriya ninu. Hashoka is Zriya, as we said, Zriya is a borrowed expression in this case, but it's a type of replanting. The immersion of the water in the mikveh is we call Zriya, and we know that Zriya, the replanting of a food that had become Tomei, the replanting of it could in effect remove the Tuma. And we didn't say what kind of food yet, but that's a concept. So we analyze this and say, well, is Hashoka in fact not Zriya? Mali Heshikon Vahagdishon, Mali Egdishon Vahagdishon. What difference does it make in terms of order of events? Of having done Hashoka and then sanctifying it where you said it becomes Tohor, the water becomes Tohor, versus where you had sanctified it first and then did the Hashoka, where we say it doesn't remove the Tumah. Alma, well, the fact is that we say there is a difference. So what is the reason, the basis of that difference? We see Ein Zriya the Hektish. Zriya is just not effective for something that had been sanctified, and only afterwards you did the Hashok or the Zriya. Ha Ha Nami, so too in our case, Ein Zriya the Truma. the truma shtilim that had become tomei, even though they were replanted, they remain osur b'achila because they remain truma tomeah. Zriah is not effective. So at this point, the halacha of the source that featured the shtile truma that had become tomei and were replanted, and we said they're nesorin b'achila, they remain osur b'achila. In fact, it's an iser achila, and it's a psul, as Rav Sheshes said, a psul of hesech hadas, and the psul of hesech hadas could very well be, according to Rabbi Yochanan's approach, it's a psul of chashash tuma, and the zriah simply doesn't help because you're dealing with something that had been truma. Yosef Rav Dimi v'ka'omar lo laha shmaitza. Rav Dimi said over this teaching that of Rabbi Shaya. Sho'omar le Abaye. Abaye asks, when Rav Hoshaya taught that Ein Zriya lehekdish, hekdishon bekli ka'omar, avo bepeh lo ovud rabbonan mala, is it a function of something that was sanctified in a vessel? And regarding that, so the rabbonan imposed their restriction that Zriya will not be effective. However, if you were dealing with something that was sanctified orally, then the Rabbanan did not impose their ma'ala, their stringency. Or possibly even something that was sanctified orally without having been put in a service vessel. A klisharis, generally speaking, is mikadesh, sanctifies that which is put into it, assuming, of course, it was something fit for the klish, for that particular klisharis. Here, Abaye is raising the possibility that not only something that was huktish bekli, but even something that was orally sanctified, the Rabbanan impose their restriction that Zriah or Hashaka will not help. Omar lay, so Rav Dimi answers, Zu lo shamati. Regarding your question specifically, regarding the ma'ala, the restriction, the stringency of Zriah, whether it includes Kekdish Bepeh or Bekli, that I didn't hear. However, another area of stringency I do have a tradition on, and in that case, we will see that even in Kedushas Peh, the Rabbanan imposed their stringency. So he says, regarding your question specifically, Zu lo shamati, kayotze bo shamati, but something very similar I did hear. The Omar Rabbi Avo, Omar Rabbi Yochanan. Anovim shenit me'u. Grapes that became tomei. Dorchon v'achar kach hekdishon tahorin. If he pressed the grapes and then sanctified the wine, Tahorim, Hegdishon v'achakar dorchon, Tamein. If he sanctified them and then pressed them, Tamein, so they remain Tomei. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Dorchon v'achakar dishon tahoros. Tahoros means they are pure, even though we're dealing with anovim, grapes that had become tamei. They, if you crush them and then sanctify them, the toros, the nesachim, the wine will be tahor. Now, this is extremely important, that which Rashi inserts now. The Rabbi Yochanan l'tamei, the Omaleo, Rabbi Yochanan here is consistent with what we have learned earlier, that mashkin mifkid kidi, mashkin, liquids within the fruits, are considered as if they are a separate entity simply stored up in the fruits as opposed to absorbed within the fruits. Mifkid kidi, they're simply stored within the shell or the peel or of the fruit. Velo kabili tumo im oichel. The fact that the grapes had become tomei, that does not communicate tumo to the liquid contained therein. Later we'll deal with how are they pressed in the first place. But if you have grapes that were tamei, that became tamei, and you pressed them, and then sanctified them, Torim, and as Rashi said, Torim, they would be fit for using as nesachim. Nesachim are wine libations on the altar. However, Higdishon v'achach dorchon tamein, if you first sanctified them, Rashi says, Higdishon v'achach dorchon tamein, kos al kadaito higdish yeno l'nesachim. At this point, we think that it's referring to sanctifying the wine for the nesachim, for the wine libations. And he says, if you sanctify them and then press them, Tamein, Rashi says, Tamein to Ovid Rabbonin Male Bekotshim de Mitamim Mashke Imo Oichal. This is extremely important for understanding the Sugya. That the reason that if you were Maktish the grapes first and then press them, the reason they're Tomei is because of this Male, this stringency. The Rabbanan imposed that here the liquids will become tomei as part of the shells, as part of the food in which they are contained. So that even though, technically speaking, according to Rabbi Yochanan, liquids within fruits are mifkad pkidi, they're considered a separate entity, in the case of something that you sanctified, a rabbinic stringency is imposed, a male, as it's called here, and the liquids contained will become tomei together with the food surrounding them. Surrounding meaning the shell, the peel, the rind that contains the liquids. And in this case, since you were makdishit, we're just being a little repetitive, since you were makdishit, we don't say here that mashkin mifkib kidi. Now when we talk about grapes, what kind of kedusha could you have imposed on grapes? V'ho anovim, the kedushas peninu. Grapes are not something you put into a service vessel. Service vessels, as we said before in passing, service vessels are makdish only something that's fit to be in them. Grapes are not something that are designed to be in a service vessel. So how were the grapes sanctified? The answer to that is they were oral. It was an oral sanctification. And you see from this halacha that they, even in the case of an oral sanctification, there is this imposed rabbinic stringency. We noted Kamo Beis, this is a reference to the O Dilma Beis that you see three lines above. Omar Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, upon hearing Rav Dimi's analysis, he rejects this. He says, Anovim Koarmis, are you citing as a means of, let's say, of solving the question through the case of Anovim, of grapes? Hocha Banovim Shel Truma Askinon. We're not talking about grapes that you sanctified something for the Beis Hamikdash per se, but rather you're dealing here with grapes that were set aside as Truma. The kedushas peh didhu kedushas kli damya. When we say sanctified grapes, we mean tithed grapes. And since in the realm of truma there is no vessel to begin with, so their oral sanctification or the oral tithing that you do is tantamount to kedushas kli. But the question we were dealing with was beyond Kedushas Kli. We were dealing with what about oral sanctification? Do the Rabbanan impose their mala, their stringency of the Zriyo doesn't help, or Hashoka doesn't help, even with regard to something that has Kedushas Peh? Anovim of Truma don't have Kedushas Peh, even though procedurally it's an oral sanctification. Nevertheless, since there is no other way of sanctifying them, it's like Kedushas Kli, Avol Hani, with regard to the Mehachag, the Boi Kli, that require being put in a vessel, Bepeh Lo Ovud Rabbanan Mala. If you had simply sanctified the water, oral sanctification, without the water being in a service vessel, it could very well be there, the Rabbanan did not impose their Mala. And if that be the case, so then Hashoka would have helped. We have a little arrow to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can attack. You can align this with the arrow just a few lines up, where Rabbi Avol, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, spoke about the anovim that have become tamei, and if you press them and only afterwards sanctify them, we say tohar. Now, the term dorcha means you press them. How much? Well, dorchan, the afilu tuva. The word dorchan would imply even a large quantity. Umi omar Rabbi Yochanan hachi. Would Rabbi Yochanan have said thusly that if you've got something that's some fruits that are tomei, that you can press them, even though Rabbi Yochanan holds that mashkin mifkat kidi, does that mean there's no restriction in terms of the amount that you can press and it still will be tahar? The Homer Rabbi Yochanan, anovim shinitmu dorchon pochos pochos mikabetza. This we saw in our previous shiur, that anovim that became tomei, if you want the liquid that exudes forth from them to be tahar, so then you had better press them using using a quantity, or pressing a quantity of less than an egg quantity of grapes at any given time. If you do that, as we learned in our previous year, since you're dealing with less than an egg quantity, so you're dealing with a quantity of food, a small quantity of food that's not capable of transmitting the tuma onwards to something else. So our problem is why. Where Rabbi Yochanan originally said his din, Dorchan Bakach Dishan Tahorim, giving us the impression that you can press as much as you want, when we know, and when we say press as much as you want and the liquid will be tahor, when we know that Rabbi Yochanan does not allow you to press as much as you want when he says you are Dorech only Pochus Pochus Mika Beitza. So the Gemara answers, you know, you're right. Iboy is saying Mahochanami Pochus Pochus Mika. So one approach simply says, that's right, Rabbi Yochanan, when he said dorchan, it doesn't mean an unlimited amount. It means you press, but you must at each time press less than an egg quantity. Another approach is hosam denogu lehu berishon, where Rabbi Yochanan said that you must press less than an egg quantity at any given time, it's because you're dealing with grapes that came into contact with a rishon level of tumah. And when that happens, the grapes themselves, the hafluhu inhu, sheni. The grapes themselves become a sheni, a second level tuma. And as such, a second level tuma is capable of continuing the chain of tuma down another level. And since we're talking about truma grapes, truma is susceptible to a third level tuma. And in order to avoid the sheni level grapes communicating tuma onwards, press less than an egg quantity at any given time. Haha. Here, where Rabbi Avo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan said dorchan without any restriction quantity wise, denogu b'sheni dehavaluhu shlishi. Then we're talking about grapes that had touched a sheni level tuma, they becoming a shlishi level tuma, and as such, we say that they cannot communicate tuma onwards. So therefore, there's no restriction. It just so happens in that context where he said dorchon v'achakik tishon, since at that point they were not sanctified, and their tuma was only, the grapes themselves were only a shlishi level tuma, there is no problem. However, we must add, and Rashi adds this point, however, if he first sanctified them and then pressed them, when you're dealing with something that's been sanctified, then we have this male, this stringency that the Rabbanan imposed, saying that the mashkin are not considered just mifkad pokid, but the mashkin contained within the fruits are part and parcel of the fruit, that went, so that when the fruit became tomei, the mashkin also became tomei. Therefore, in that halacha, we, as we saw Rabbi Yavo, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, making the distinction between Dorchon v'Achdishan and Ikdishan v'Achdorchon. But in a case of Dorchon v'Achdishan, the liquid will be Tohor, and why is that? Because when the grapes became Tomei, they had become a Shlishi level of Tuma, and at that point you press them, at that point they had not been sanctified, and therefore they were not capable of transmitting Tuma any further. However, now we're being a bit repetitive, however, in that very case where the grapes had come into contact with a sheni, becoming themselves a shlishi, if, however, before pressing you sanctify them, so at that point that you have sanctified grapes that touched a sheni, they become a shlishi, and the liquid also becomes a shlishi because of the male asher osu rabbonan. We continue in the Gemara. Second line from the bottom, Omar Rava, Af Anan Tanina. Now here we have a new marking, a diamond, and on the side under our Mivneh heading, we've written Rayos Sheovdu Rabbonon Male Chumra Bekotchim. Some proofs to this idea that when it comes to Kotchim, there is an area of stringency that we apply that we wouldn't apply ordinarily. Omar Rava, Af Anant Namitin. We too have learned in a Tanaic source this idea of a male, and in this particular discussion, we're going to see a male, even as Rashi says, even Bekedushas Ape, even something that was sanctified orally. This, by the way, would be not necessarily like Rav Yosef, but more like the attempt of Rav Dimi to reach such a conclusion that Kedushas, that even in the case of Kedushas Peh, there is this mala, this stringency that's applied, whereby things like Zriya and Hashaka wouldn't work. Let's see the source that he brings in and what he says about that. So we have a source that talks about the preparation of what's called the mechatos. Mechatos is the mixture of water with the ashes from a red heifer. The water is drawn in a vessel. The water that is spoken about is water that's drawn from a live spring, and the ashes from the burnt red heifer are sprinkled upon this water. And that water is then used in the purification process of people that are Tomei Mace, that were defiled to the dead. But now we're focusing right now on the preparation of the water with the ash. The Pasuk says, V'nosan olav mayim chayim el keli. And we learn from this pasuk shetei chiyuson bekli. Rashi explains that the water is drawn in a vessel. The water must remain in that vessel that you use to draw the water, and then you take the ashes and sprinkle it upon the water in the what we'll call the original vessel, the original drawing vessel. However, the word v'nosan in the pasuk, alma tlushin ninhu. The word v'nosan, Rashi explains, implies that the water that you drew in the original vessel could in fact be poured into a second vessel, and there you mix the ashes in. So it's almost a, on the one hand, the source tells me, Shetei chiyusan bekli, which would mean no further pouring of water from original vessel. The word venosan implies, yes, you could pour the water into a second vessel before you mix it with the ash. But did the source not say that you cannot do that? Mechubar means the water must remain attached to the original vessel. Elo, the Gemara continues at the top of Daf Lamed Hey. Elo, what do we see? Mala. Meaning, technically speaking, from the Torah standpoint, the water can be poured from the original vessel into a second vessel and then mix in the ashes.
However, there is an additional mala, an additional stringency that's imposed, that says, true, the Torah says you have the option of pouring into a second vessel, but don't do it. Rashi at the top says, Ela mala bi'almohu. It's a simple stringency, midrabonan, that's of a rabbinic nature, shitei chiyusan bekli, that the water should remain in the original vessel, v'asmuchu rabbonan akra. And the rabbonan used the posik as a basis for their rabbinic ruling, even though it's not truly, even though they used a posik, it's merely rabbinic. And their rabbinic ruling had been seen at the bottom of Amud Beis, Venosan Olav Mayim Chayim El Keli, the drusha on the words Chayim El Keli Shetiyach Chusim Mekli, that is rabbinic in nature. But what do we see? We see that the rabbis intervene and impose stringencies beyond that which is, we'll call, the letter of the law. Well, and the sanctification there with regard to the poraduma is something that's merely oral in nature. You're not dealing with something that's of a Beis Hamikdash nature, which would have involved clay shores. Well, hocha nami, so too over here, where we say that in general zriya is metahir things, hocha nami, in the case of truma male, this is a stringency whereby we say that the zriya does not help to metahir, and hence the shtile truma that were nidnu remain osur be'achila. And this, of course, is an explanation of the source that we saw back on Lamed Dalid Omed Aleph. We continue. Omer Rav Simi Bar Ashi Af Anan Nami Tanina. He too brings a proof or a precedent for the Rabbonan imposing a mala in the realm of Kochim. It says, Toval, someone who had been Tomei, immersed himself in a mikveh, the Allah came out of the mikveh, even though the sun has not set yet, Oichel b'maiser, he is entitled to eat Maiser Sheni. Maiser Sheni is produce that is tithe the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle. And they're eaten in Yerushalayim. And there is a level of purity, of tahara, that must be maintained. And that is reflected here, that if a person had been Tomei, as long as he goes into the mikveh, even though the full tahara process hasn't been achieved with regard to other matters, with regard to Maiser Sheni, the immersion in the mikveh is enough, and he can eat his Maiser. Heriv Shimsho, if the same person had been Tomei and was a Kohen, and he wants to eat Truma, so only once the sun sets can he then eat Truma. And now we infer, B'truma in B'kotchim Lo. He can eat Truma, but he cannot eat sacrificial meat. Well, am I? Why can't he eat sacrificial meat? Tor, who is he not? Tor? Why, in the case of someone who had become Tomei, and it comes to eating sacrificial meat, and Rashi points out that we're talking about a type of tuma that requires the bringing of a sacrifice. And examples of that include someone who was a zav, a zava, a yoledes, a woman who gave birth. She cannot eat from kachim, from sacrificial meat, until she brings her sacrifice. Likewise, a zav, a male who had a certain type of emission, who's tomei for 7 days. So at the seventh day, he would go into the mikveh. At the end of the seventh day, the sun would set. But he cannot eat sacrifices until the next day, until he brings his korban. But why is that so? Is he not tor from the fact that there was Harav Shemesh as well as his going to mikveh the day before? Helamale, rather, this represents a stringency in the realm of Kochim. Hochanami, so too, what we said before with regard to Truma, that Zriya will not be effective in removing the Tuma. That's also a mala, a stringency. There is a vigorous discussion that one will find in the Tosfos, and there's a note on the side, Tosfos back on Daf Yud Tesam and Aleph, as well as Tosfos in Chagiga, Daf Chav Gimel Amud Beis, that
discusses this term mala in this particular context of someone who was, we call Mechusar Kippurim, who needed to bring sacrifices to exit his tuma period, is how can the term mala, which up till now we were translating as a mala de rabbanon, a rabbinic stringency, when in fact someone who's called a Mechusar Kippurim, who needs to bring sacrifices in order to leave his tuma status, is a Torah level form of tumah. So Tosfos explains that the word maleh does not necessarily mean only a rabbinic stringency, but it could also be associated with a Torah imposed stringency, in this case a Torah imposed stringency within the realm of kochim. This concept of astringency basically means that with regard to all other areas of halacha, we wouldn't apply this enhanced standard, but here we do. And the use of that term is quite acceptable, even within our discussion regarding the ineffectiveness of the zriya with regard to the truma plants that had been tomei. We continue. Omar Rav Ashi, Af Anan Nami Tanina, another example of a ma'ala, of a stringency. There is a posuk that's found in Vayikra Perek Zion Posuk Yutes. On the side, we've noted the posuk. It says, Va'abosar shiyiga b'chol tamei lo ye'ochel, bo'eshi sorei va'abosar kol tohor yochal bosar. The loose translation of the posuk is that if sacrificial meat that came into contact with any form of tumah, do not eat it. It shall be burnt. And then there's an extra word, v'habosar, says, and as far as the meat is concerned, only someone who's Torah shall eat the meat. Now, we mentioned that there's this extra word, and even if we focus in a little more specifically, the vav of that word, v'habosar, is an extra letter, l'rabos esoetzim ulevona, to include the wood that's dedicated to the altar, and levona is the spice that's used as an offering. The levona was part of the lechem haponim offering. It's also applied to different meal offerings. These are non-food items. Eitzim and levona are non-food items. And we point out that the drosha in this pasuk is saying that tumah is that eitzim and levona are subject to becoming tomei. So the Gemara says eitzim levona b'nei t'muyaninu are wood and levona spice food items that would lend themselves to becoming tomei. No, they're not. They're non-edibles. They're non-edibles. They're not vessels. They don't lend themselves to becoming tomei in general. However, here we're talking about Eitzim and Levona that are dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. Elamale. So rather, what are we seeing here? We're seeing a Torah-imposed stringency. Well, Hochanami, so too with our discussion of the Truma Male. We say this is a stringency that's imposed on the Truma that Zriya will not be effective in being Metayer it. Before we sign off, let us just remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.